over this way, and I'll kind of see over this way.
So who are you?
All right, I'm Joshua Allen, technical evangelist for Internet Explorer 7, and I'm here interviewing the IE7 security team about some of the new security features that are put into Internet Explorer.
Oh, cool. So. There's a lot of activity out here in the hall, too. Chris Perillo is down there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so who are you guys?
I'm
You're Rob Franco, because he's
right.
Interviewing you.
That's
guys.
Right. I'm Rob Franco, lead program manager for IE Security.
Yep. And?
Robert Gu, and I'm the dev lead for Lowlights IE.
Awesome.
Yep. Cool.
Cool. You're in charge, Joshua.
Right. So the first thing, I know a lot of people watching this are probably going to be aware that XPSP2 was a pretty major release of Internet Explorer, and in that release, you put a ton of work into security. So the first thing I wanted to ask is, you know, now that you're moving to IE7, does that mean that it's all new features now that you've done the security work, or what's going on?
So it's funny you ask that, because I always think of security, that is a feature, right? And that's our primary focus. That's one of the most important focuses of the IE team and IE7 is the security work that we're doing here. So one of the things that people have been hearing a lot about is phishing as a problem that our customers are facing. And we have a huge new feature in IE7 called the phishing filter that has dynamic protections for users when it senses a phishing attack. It actually takes the user away from the phishing page and has kind of smarts inside it.
What is phishing?
Oh, good question. So phishing is.
I know what it is, but just in case,
sure.
Mom or dad or
hi, Mom. Phishing, those are those emails you get from the banks that you don't have accounts at, that keep asking you to go and give your social security number and your credit card information. And unfortunately, this is a common scam that's spreading across the internet right now, that people are getting these emails that lead them to a fraudulent website that then tries to steal their personal information from them or coax them into giving their personal information.
Cool.
So one of the coolest features that we're building in IE7 is this filter, like I said, that runs inside of IE and detects when you're at a page that could be kind of running the scam and takes you away from the page that has smarts in it to detect something, even if it's not a known site. If it's a potential site, we can protect you then too. So it's pretty cool. This is another case where we're using the community feedback. You know, the way we've used community feedback before with crashes, now we're using community feedback. If you stumble on a site that you think is a phishing site, you can report that to Microsoft. Then we have a team that will go out and evaluate it against some criteria, and then potentially, you know, mark that as a site to protect people against.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. So in addition to the feature work like the phishing filter, what are some of the major feature investments that you've made in IE7 around security? And just as like a rough wild guess, what would you say the percentage of budget on IE7 features were security related versus none?
Well, if I had my way, it would be 100% of IE7 budget on security features. Probably the biggest investment in the across the whole team. And one of the things, you know, we started out talking about the phishing filter, but there's actually a strategy behind the whole thing. And the strategy maps to this practice we have inside of Microsoft called the security development lifecycle. So the way that we develop software to be more secure now is we sit down and look at the way that the software works, and we model out the way that the data comes in and out of the software to look for ways that the bad guys are going to attack our users when they're using our software. So we have an entire range of features that are designed to go out and tackle these risks that we call threats in the software, including enhancements to the architecture that make it, you know, really, really robust against the types of vulnerabilities that, you know, are inherent in these threats. The phishing filter is a good example of something that helps protect us against threats. And another example is that, even if the software itself is protected against all these threats, there are plugins and add-ons that can run inside of our software, and those might have threats, those might have vulnerabilities. We might miss, some issue, and there might still be a vulnerability after we ship. In fact, you know, generally with software development, you say there will be vulnerabilities after you ship, and you prepare yourself for those vulnerabilities. So one of the coolest things that we're doing, which we're really excited to talk to you about today is this idea of low rights IE, and we're actually calling it protected mode IE now. But protected mode IE, basically the idea is that even if there's a vulnerability that is, you know, in IE and an attacker tries to use that vulnerability, the attacker can't use the vulnerability to put software on a user's system. So what that means is that it really kind of contains the impact of a vulnerability, you know, if and when they happen. So we're really excited about this. It's one of the biggest innovations in some ways from a security perspective, because it changes the model of how vulnerabilities exist inside of Internet Explorer.
Okay, so just to clarify on the protected mode IE, you know, people have probably seen ActiveX controls. They may have heard of browser helper objects and some of these spyware things that can get installed in the browser's process space.
Yes.
So which sets of these kinds of browser extensions does protected mode IE help with?
Okay, so that's a great question. Protected mode IE doesn't help with a particular class. It helps with any class of extension that actually runs inside of IE, because protected mode IE actually contains the entire IE process and makes the entire IE process kind of unable to propagate badness across the user system, which is really exciting.
So basically, even if there's a bug or a buffer overrun in the IE process, it's going to still be within this protected mode.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's exactly the design. So, you know, when you think of, you know, for the geeks out there who, like me, who go in and look at the actual XE, when you think about running iExplorer.exe, which is the IE process, that process simply won't have the privileges to write outside of, you know, a couple specific areas of the user system. So the temporary internet files folder is specifically where, you know, this protected mode IE will still be able to read and write files from that location, but it won't be able to write anywhere else. And the interesting thing there is, well, you know, we know that users go and they save pictures from the web, they save it to the My Pictures folder, or they have to you know, download a driver for their new PC that they just bought. So there are scenarios that IE in that configuration wouldn't on its own be able to save the file to the My Documents folder. It wouldn't be able on its own to launch a driver install or an ActiveX install that the user actually wants to have on their system. So a lot of the engineering behind this went into actually enabling each of those scenarios to work in a safer way outside of the IE process in a way that, you know, we think can't be attacked. So that's
okay.
A lot of what's exciting about it.
Since I've helped clean off several of my friends' computers with spyware and malware
yep.
on it, there's several classes, and I think that was where you were going. There's stuff that gets on your system that just is annoying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it'll pop up a lot of pop-ups, or it'll change the whole...
Well, don't prevent the pop-up.
Yeah.
It's still pop-up.
Yeah.
But we just prevent any... Suppose your extension has a problem, we protect you.
Yeah. But you've seen these systems with a lot of malware
yeah.
on them,
yeah.
and you start up the system, and it starts popping things
yeah.
up.
But we have a feature to block a pop-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, one of the things we've seen, and I know you've seen it, I've seen it, I've helped my friends clean off their systems when that's happened. Hi, Kevin. In that scenario, what happens is that once executable code is running on the system, historically, it's been able to spread out across the whole user's system.
Yeah.
So one of the great things about Windows Vista is it's not just low rights IE protecting you. We have this idea of user account protection in conjunction with protected mode IE. So here's how they work together. I'm browsing around the internet, and I don't have any spyware installed on my system, and I go to a site that wants to attack me, and it tries to take advantage of a vulnerability to try and kind of do a drive-by download and inject spyware onto my system.
Yeah.
Well, low rights IE, because it's running with lower privileges, can't spread that spyware around on the user system. So the user's been protected from kind of this overt attack.
So it stays in the box that IE's running.
Exactly.
In, basically.
Now, then you mentioned, you know, hey, well, what if the users maybe they downloaded and install something that's a a piece of software that helps them share music files, right?
Yeah.
And as soon as the user has actually decided to install something that helps them share music files, they have probably let it out of Lowrights IE. And at that point, what we have is what's called the user account protection feature. And user account protection restricts things that are running at the user's level from kind of permanently installing them on the system unless the user goes in and says, hey, here's my admin credentials. You know, I am an administrator on this machine. I recognize that the software that I'm installing is going to basically install itself permanently on the user system. So there's kind of these two levels of protection. The first is against, you know, with protected mode IE is against the software that silently tries to download itself.
Yeah.
And then if I've decided to download something, I have this notification that the thing I've you know, decided to download wants to spread out with kind of admin privileges all over the system, and it's, you know, going to be there potentially permanently. Now, we also have you know, Microsoft anti-spyware that updates itself and keeps track of the types of software that aren't so popular with our users after they get it, and that's another way that, you know, we're going to help protect users against this stuff.
So I wanted to kind of drill into the distinction between the Windows-based kind of sandboxing and the protected mode IE, and maybe I'll direct this one at Robert for a minute. So, you know, I understand if you're a developer, you know, one of the videos that is going to be running at the same time as this video covers the user account protection in Vista. And so we're going to be telling developers, write applications that take advantage of user account protection and run well with user account protection turned on. But it sounds like what you're saying is that protected mode IE actually runs with lower rights than a standard user account protection, and is actually, you know, restricted even more. And so I'm wondering, under the covers, kind of how did you accomplish that? And is this something that other devs writing applications could do as well? So
yeah, in addition to Windows user protection mode, it's called UAP now, they also have something that's called a MIC. MIC level is more detailed than a UAP. UAP only have like equivalent to the MIC level median. For the median, which means you cannot write to HKLM or program files, but you can write to HKCU or user profiles. If you have some sensitive documents, if some kind of bad software, they can delete your files. They can overwrite it. But if you're running the Lowrights IE, basically you are running at MIC level low. What does that mean is you cannot write to...
What does MIC mean, by the way?
MIC is Mandatory Integrity Control.
Yep.
Okay.
So in long haul, any secure object will have MIC level. So basically, there's a lot of levels there. But for normal use, we have three levels, which is low means you cannot write to anywhere unless somewhere you marked specifically, say, low can access. And the median, which is equivalent to the lower level, UAP level. So that means you can write to HKCU and a user profile. And a higher level, it's admin level, you can write to HKM and then program files and C Windows. You can even go higher, which is system driver, it's even higher than standard admin. So when IE running at low, which means if there's a buffer overflow in IE or in any add-on, suppose we heard about like a couple of weeks ago, we have a PDF has a buffer overflow. So if in that case, we can also protect that. So we're not only protect IE, we also protect the add-on.
Yep. Okay, so I guess the next question then is, if you're running IE with low mandatory integrity control, which basically says that it can't really touch any of these secured objects, then how do you accomplish things like file save within IE or, you know, installing some control on a web page?
That is a good question, right? So when Lowrights IE running at low, you cannot do that. How do we do that? We have we introduced two brokers. One broker is called Admin Broker, which is basically do admin stuff. So if you want install ActiveX, we're using Admin Broker to let you write to HKLM and C program files.
So
then we have
brokers,
another broker. Yeah, broker is a process.
Okay.
We have another broker which is learning at a lower level, which is a median level, we call iUser. And if we want to save as something, we call that broker. Hey, I want to save this file to my user profile. Then we hand him, where's the file? And this broker is going to, he's going to pick up from the low place. He's copied into the median place, which is your user profile.
But that's only if the user consents and, you know, the user gets to see the prompt. And the prompt says, you know, do you want to run or save this file? It's exactly the same user experience that we've always had in IE. Mm-hmm. Except now when you see that prompt that's making the decision, that's actually IE user running, helping kind of control overwrites IE from potentially putting the file someplace it wants to put it.
Okay, yeah. So that was going to be the next question is if somebody is able to, you know, run their own code within the low writes in the protected mode IE space, what's to stop them from then making bad requests to the broker? And you've basically just said that it doesn't just take any arbitrary data from the low writes process.
That's right. We do not trust the broker. We have to assume that the broker has been compromised. That's kind of the theory behind the whole protected mode IE.
No. We don't trust IE. We trust our broker.
We trust the broker. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
You got it right. We trust the we trust the broker, but we don't trust the IE process.
Yep. Okay. Great. So.
And by the way, that's it's interesting from a threat modeling perspective. If Mike Howard were here, he would say you moved the threat boundary. So we moved what we consider the threat boundary, and we actually do separate threat models on these broker processes. So we look at how the data comes into the broker process and try to kind of develop, you know, a new threat model for each of these brokers and make sure that they're robust against the threats that low writes IE might try to inject into them.
Yeah.
So basically, any operation, if you want the user broker to do, we will pop up. But for better customer experience, for some certain kind of experience, we let you go through without pop-up, but you have to be admin to make that happen. We have a policy. Suppose you want to launch Microsoft Word without any pop-up, you can put the word.exe in the registry. Say, hey, anytime I launch this process, don't pop up.
Yeah. Okay. But in that scenario, the Microsoft Word process, if it's elevated from low to medium through the mechanism that Robert was describing, when it's running at medium, then you know it's no longer inside of the protection of the low rates process. So, you know, part of the message we want to send to our partners at the PDC is, hey, you know, there are a lot of protections available to you if you stay inside of the IE process, or if you allow yourself to be launched by the IE process directly, rather than registering yourself to elevate up to the medium level. So we definitely want to encourage folks, hey, take a look at the way that your add-in runs, that your extensions run inside of IE, and see what changes you can make. We're going to have a lot of kind of specific new APIs that extensions can use so that they can, you know, communicate with a broker and make some of the, save a setting that's outside of the scope of protected mode IE. And that's going to be one of the tools that is available that we'll be talking about at the PDC.
So in addition to the policy, you can learn from low to medium silently, which you have some policy. You can also use policy, set something, I don't want to elevate this EXE at all. Suppose PDF, and they can write a good application which can learn in the low, in the future. They can put in a policy. Anytime somebody launch pdf.exe or acrobat.exe, don't launch me at a median, launch me at a low.
Yep.
We can also do that. And we encourage the third party developer application which can be learning in the low.
Right, so if they can guarantee it's always going to work in low, then they should just mark it that way and that will never get elevated.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Okay. So I think Rob had a demo that could show off some of the some of the security features. So
absolutely.
Take a shot.
I bet there's going to be some people who buy Windows Vista and then try to load other browsers on it. Will you get the same security features if you use other?
That's a good question. So the protected mode IE protections apply specifically to the iExplorer.exe process.
Okay.
So they don't apply to other folks who host the the WebOC, which is the Web Object Control, which is the, we call it the Trident HTML engine inside of Microsoft.
Okay.
Now, at the same time, in the same way that we've implemented Protected Mode IE, anyone else who has written a browser, whether it hosts the WebOC or whether it hosts any other rendering engine, could go and implement that themselves. All they have to do is go implement, use the MIC to mark their process as low, and then see what scenarios would need a comparable broker process, and then kind of go and implement scenarios into brokers.
Okay.
So it's not just browsers, though. It's also email applications and messenger clients, and anyone who is internet facing, who faces effectively in the security parlance, it's a very high threat level because you're facing untrusted web content. You should definitely consider implementing your primary process as a lower privilege process, and then use brokers as needed to elevate things to medium. But that's like a really common security principle is run with least privilege.
Yeah.
Only take what you need. Lock up the dangerous things and keep them away. And that's kind of the principle behind Lower
Site.
Got it. Yep. Okay. So what I'll do first here is I'm going to show what's kind of a mocked up attack. We wrote an ActiveX control on the IE team internally to demonstrate some of the mistakes that folks have made historically with ActiveX controls. People have had ActiveX controls that have had buffer overruns, where the ActiveX control just arbitrarily puts a file into the user's startup folder. For your folks, for your friends like, let's say, Kevin, who've had spyware on their system, the startup folder is a common place where people are trying to put spyware. So here, this is on an XP XP2 IE6 machine. We've got the special control that we built here that does the evil thing. I've got my path. It's going to the startup folder. It's a batch file. I've got format C colon in my batch file. And create file succeeded. I will alt tab over here. And this folder that was empty before now has the evil batch file. For the purposes of saving my machine, I will actually delete this rather than running it. But you can imagine that if the I deleted it twice. It was so evil I had to delete it twice. It's like pure evil in that. What was that movie where from the 80s? It was really good, but there was pure evil at the end. And somebody on Channel 9 on the blog, please remind me what the name of the movie was because it was awesome. Okay, so at any rate, we can see that this pure evil page put something into the user startup folder, once inside the user startup folder, Kevin, my parents, your friends are not ever going to go to the startup folder. They're not going to know it's there, and it's just sitting there.
So
it's going to run forever.
Their machine,
every time they run their machine, that thing is going to throw up, pop-up ads for whatever the heck it wants to, whether you want it or not. And the user has some potential spyware running on their system. So now I'm going to go over to Windows Vista, and this is going to be highly anticlimactic if I do my job right here. Here we go. We've got the startup folder again over here. It's empty.
Yeah.
You see, I have no tricks up my sleeve.
No tricks up your sleeve. All right.
Okay. I have the path to the startup folder here, and you can see here the create file failed. That's awesome. That's good news, because what that means is that my startup folder's clean. I went to this page. The page did its worst, and my system is still safe from it.
Right.
So that's really cool. One of the things that Robert's been talking about, in the architecture conversation here was, these broker processes. And these broker processes are all there to allow to allow the user to do things that IE no longer has permissions to do.
Yeah.
So here, and I can show something. I mean, this is kind of simple, and it's very simple here. I'm going to go ahead and set my homepage to a different homepage.
Okay.
So this is actually not going to navigate to that page because I'm offline, but that prompt that came up, that internet options prompt, that was the IE user XE broker. And Low Rates IE used com, called the broker, you know, threw up the broker. The broker then accepted the change that I made as a user,
yeah.
Wrote that to the registry in a place that LoRaiTai couldn't. And now when I try to go to my homepage, it's going to go out and look for a page that I can't find because it's not connected to the network.
Yeah.
But the point is here that the homepage has now been written to a different location. So that's a huge step, given that IE itself doesn't have the privileges to go there.
Right. Now, if my mom goes to XYZ webpage from a big company or something, and she wants to download XYZ toolbar, right, what's the experience going to be like for her?
So when she clicks on the link that, you know, would say download, right?
Yeah.
LoRaiTai is going to call the broker and say, broker, the user wants to download this file,
okay.
Right? And then the broker will present the user with the prompt, your mom in this case, the prompt that she's seen before, which is the, you know, run, save, cancel prompt.
Yeah.
So at that point, if your mom chooses run, the user writes broker, downloads the file, and launches it in your mom's context. But the page itself can't, you know, use a vulnerability to spam it onto your mom's machine without her, you know, consenting and deciding to run the thing.
Right. Now, what if that toolbar has a second process that is spyware, you know, that does some nasty stuff?
So
does it warn her that another install is being, you know, installed at the same time?
That's a great question. So once the toolbar is running inside of IE, if for some reason or other that thing wants to download and install more code onto the system, because it was launched inside of IE, it's restricted by the privileges that LoRaiTai IE has, that protected mode IE has.
Okay.
So as it tries to pull down more stuff, it's unable to do so.
Right.
So all the common say that when you say you click a learn, save, after you click a learn, you will also get a credential dialog, which is brand new for the Wikistar,
right? And that's right. That's
so if you ask your password.
What kind of dialog will you get?
It's an elevation dialog, so it's like a UAP dialog.
Okay, so I could take admin rights away from my mom, and she wouldn't be able to install anything, right?
Absolutely. Yes, if your mom don't have admin, she can't.
Excellent. That's what I'm going to do.
And you know, it's still going to be a requirement for somebody to kind of have, oversight onto the things that people are installing in the system. And we can't protect people from installing bad software. What we can do is make sure that they have, you know, the opportunity to confirm or deny that and to make a clear decision. Yes, I want to run this software that I downloaded from the internet. Yes, I want to grant an admin privileges.
Yeah.
And then we really still are, in some regards, really counting on the user to make a good decision there. But that's why we have a lot of other tools like the Microsoft Anti-Spyware that help inform the decision for the user and help them make the right decision based on, you know, hey, do I want to install this toolbar?
Yeah.
Well, if it's from, you know, a big partner or company that I trust, then yes. If it's from, you know, this shady website that's trying to promise me, you know, millions and millions of dollars for free, then, you know, let's hope that we're developing some more savvy in our user base at this point, and that our tools can protect.
Right,
people.
But a lot of these toolbars don't just download the toolbar. They throw 10 or 13
yep.
EXE files, and often into the start folder, and
mm-hmm.
that's where I see machines get messed up, like
yep.
your famous P2P music player. You load
mm-hmm.
this player, and you think you're just getting this player, but you get a lot of other things
yep.
at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Does the system warn you that it's loading 13 different applications, or does it do anything like that?
So I think that specific to this, to that scenario, right now we would definitely be protected against some of the types of toolbars that are out right now. Once this toolbar that you're describing realizes that it's going to need admin rights to do the things that the nasty things that it wants to do, then it's potentially going to, you know, beg and plead with the user, like, give me admin rights, and then
okay.
once I've got admin rights, then I'll install all this junk all over their system. So that's kind of the scenario that we will be in, and that's exactly why people are going to still need to make good decisions about the stuff that they download.
Got it.
Yep.
So
and
still need to be real careful about what you load.
That's right. But this idea of, you know, not granting admin rights to just anybody on the system, but really requiring, you know, the person who's most savvy in the family to have the admin rights is a big difference. And in corporations, it's a huge difference because now users will be able to get things done that they weren't able to do before running as a limited user. But they won't have to be administrators. So, you know, if they want to install a couple of things, they'll be able to potentially do that without, you know, being able to take over the entire system, which, you know, a lot of users run as admins today. Do you run as an admin?
Not anymore.
Not anymore? Good. Yeah. Good answer. Yeah. So, but it's tough. Yeah. It's tough. And that's the, you know, not anymore probably because you're running Windows Vista.
No. Even on XP. It's a pain.
Yeah.
It's hard because you have to... It takes discipline, and that's not something that a lot of people
But a lot have. Of applications, they can't learn at that level, right? So one of my challenges is, how do I make those applications run, right? So I take away the privilege. You can't write to HKM, you can't write to HKCU. And at the same time, so we need to let you do something, and that's very challenging.
Yeah, that actually brings up a good question from the architecture standpoint, is how do you guys address that when you have a toolbar or, you know, some other add-in that's very popular that needs rights to be able to write stuff to a place, you know, to some, its own folder, its own, you know, temporary storage folder or something like that. What have you done in the architecture to make it so that those applications can continue to work in a low rights process?
Yeah, that is a good question. In long run, I would like all the applications, they create their own folders marked as low. That's what I want to see. The reality is there's like 90% of third-party products they rely on writing to HKCU, HKLM. Now, how do we do that? The way we mitigate that app compatibility issue is we provide a shim so that if you write to somewhere in HKCU and we catch it, we will virtualize the location you write. It's right into our low folder, but it's to you, it looks like you're writing to the HKCU.
Yep.
Okay, great. So a shim that kind of virtualizes the calls. It's pretty cool.
Exactly. So that means if I've, let's say I've got a toolbar and my toolbar is saving off a list of URLs that the user, you know, has been typing into the toolbar, then, and if I've been writing those into HKCU, the shim that's running inside of protected mode IE will just rewrite those, redirect them down to kind of the equivalent of the temporary internet files in a location that still looks to me like all my URLs are there, like I've been recording them, but, you know, isn't writing itself into a place where it could do any damage. Yeah.
Great.
Cool.
All right, so...
Anything else we need to know about security in IE or in Windows Vista? Well, we'll get a separate one with Windows Vista, but...
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah,
well,
it's been great.
To answer your question, we really do want to encourage people in the security community. We depend on a lot of the feedback that they give us to help us, you know, validate the threat model that we have for IE. So, you know, we want to encourage folks who are out there. We're going to be at a conference called Hack in the Box in Malaysia later in September. So we want to make sure that folks are coming there and listening to our message there too.
And responsible disclosure of any
absolutely responsible disclosure
starts with secure@microsoft.com.
Starts with secure@microsoft.com. Whenever you find a new threat or a new vulnerability in, you know, either the production code or in one of the betas like Windows Vista, it's really important that you send it to secure@microsoft.com because that kicks off the process that helps us get out there and improve the product and protect, you know, everyone who's running the system from this vulnerability. And then, you know, we always work with our security researchers to make sure that, you know, that their role in helping improve our product is recognized, because that's very, very important to us.
Yeah, we've had that team on Channel 9 before.
Yes. So.
Well, thank you for spending a few minutes explaining what's going on in IE and Windows Vista.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks.